that's going to wrap up part one of today's edition of the Morning Magazine on AM 1320 and WFHR.com. As always, it's brought to you by Comfort Air.
Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Plumbing has been your Bryant dealer serving central Wisconsin since 1999, specializing in installation, maintenance, and repair of all types of heating, cooling, and ventilation equipment for both residential and commercial. Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Plumbing has certified technicians that work on all makes and models. We are fully insured and a Better Business Bureau A-plus accredited business. Stop in our showroom today, 880 Highway 73 South, or check us out online, comfortair.biz. Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, whatever it takes.
The education your kids deserve shouldn't be bound by the price of tuition. That's why the school choice programs in Wisconsin allow students to attend private and religious schools tuition-free. Open enrollment is going on now through April 20th, so take action today to ensure your child begins the 2016-17 school year in the best school possible. To find out more about the school choice programs and availability in your area, visit ChooseYourSchoolWI.org. That's ChooseYourSchoolWI.org.
A wind advisory is currently in effect. A chance of rain showers and thunderstorms continuing this afternoon, otherwise gradually clearing skies by the evening, daytime highs topping out in the mid-40s. A southerly wind of 15 to 20 that could gust to 40 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies in store for tonight, lows bottoming out in the mid-30s. Again with a westerly wind of 15 to 20 that could gust to 30 miles an hour. From the WeatherEye Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Nikki Latola.
And that wind advisory again is in effect till 6 tonight, and that means sustained winds of 30 to possibly 45 miles an hour are likely, and the Weather Service says that means small objects may be blown onto roadways. No kidding. Driving high-profile vehicles will be difficult. You, both hands on the wheel, gang, and slow down a little bit. And sporadic power outages are also possible, which reminds me, you wouldn't be bothered by this windy weather if you were driving a new Jeep from Johnson Chrysler on West Grand Avenue in Wisconsin Rapids. Right now, clouds, and it's getting a little dark. There's some showers and thunderstorms to the west, and they're going to be here eventually. Right now, it's cloudy and 40 in Wausau, 40 in Marshfield, 39 in Point, and 46 here at AM 1320 in Wisconsin Rapids.
Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine, presented by Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Plumbing. It's time for part two. Once again, here's Carl Hilke.
Thank you, Jerry, and welcome back, everybody. It's time for another edition of Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Pry. You can reach your local investment professionals by calling 715-422-0700. Today's topic class is how to handle the current market volatility. And with that, we say hello, Professor. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Went to the Gridiron Club, so got a chance to meet Paul Crist, the head coach of the football team, and was started after the banquet and everything else. We're watching a little bit of the start of the basketball game, and didn't get off to a good start, and by the time I got home, it was really ugly. It was one of those games.
Yeah, you know, it's crunch time. Every game really counts for someone, both teams, obviously, and you know, we haven't beaten Michigan State at Michigan State since 2004. They're obviously a really good team with a really good player. We had beaten them, so I think they had this game circled on their calendar, and they came out, and we really never even challenged them.
Yeah, as well. But hey, we can do it again come Sunday when we host Illinois.
Yeah, so, you know, the real interesting thing will be how they rebound, because Michigan State, if you know, the average fan would have looked at that game, I don't think they had us winning it.
No.
Much like they didn't have us winning Maryland. And the reality is that Illinois is a game we need to win. Iowa, who knows, on the road, because Iowa needs to win that. Michigan at home is being, and you know, Minnesota's been playing really good. They finally won last week.
They beat Maryland, and Maryland, I think, was still down after getting beat by Wisconsin.
Right. Well, and you know, you get to a position at the end of the year where one team needs to win, And when teams lost so much they have nothing to lose, you play looser. And, you know, if you miss a shot, well, big deal. You know, it's not like that. It was an NC2A
You're having shot, fun out there.
Yeah, exactly, and stuff. So, you know, if we beat Illinois, we beat Michigan, and we beat Minnesota, I would guess that we still have a really good chance of continuing our streak in the NC2A.
Okay. Well, a lot of, talking about streaks, the markets. Saw an article in the money section of the USA Today. They were talking about the minutes of the last Fed meeting. And, you know, they had it out. And the Fed is very concerned now, obviously, according to the minutes. The statement they always give is never like what the minutes reflect. And they're talking about QE4, maybe possible.
Yeah, I think everything's in play, you know. And so... if you probably go to the minutes, there's some consistency, but, you know, I think they want to put into play, they do have options when a lot of people don't think they don't have options.
Okay. So what is causing all of this volatility?
Well, I think, you know, the headlines... is that obviously China
right.
is just always in the headlines, and you know, so let's dissect this a little. So China had an incredible streak of double-digit GDP growth, and now that growth is not as substantial. But when they had that double-digit, they were buying everything. They were the major purchaser of oil and major purchaser of iron ore and major purchaser of, you know, XYZ. I mean, they were buying everything. And so in because of that, emerging countries, especially countries that had resources, had minerals, had metals, had oil, became extremely... well off, all right?
Right.
They were growing at remarkable rates. So prior to the last year, I would say in the last decade, over 50% of the world's growth came from the emerging countries. And the emerging countries were growing because they were selling mainly to China. So the significance of China is that now that their growth rate is slowing, doesn't mean that the absolute dollar amount of business is going down, because the rule of large numbers is that 10% of a million is 100,000. Well, 5% of 500,000 is 250,000. So you have more dollars, you just don't have as high a growth rate. So the actual dollars, even at whatever they say it is, I mean, if they're talking about 6% in China or whatever. Let's say it's 4%.
Mm-hmm.
At 4%, they're still going to be in the top five growth countries in the world this year.
Right.
So it's not like China's got this big issue in terms of they're not growing, but they're not growing the same way. They were manufacturing, they were exporting to every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the world. Now they're trying to convert to a consumer country, consumer-led country, very similar to the United States, where 70% of our growth in GDP is usually attributed to the consumer.
Right.
Right? So here's where we're at. The emerging countries can't sell as much as they had originally or had in the past to China.
Right.
They have expanded their facilities and put money into the infrastructure and did all these things because everybody assumes that the growth goes on forever.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And with them being in their prosperous days, obviously they were buying exports from the United States. They were getting exports from Europe. So you can see there's a little trickle-down effect here in that the emerging countries aren't selling as much, so they're not buying as much.
Right.
Because they're not buying as much, the U.S. and the European countries and the companies in those countries aren't selling as much. Because if you look at our export or imports our exports to China, it's a very low percentage, all right? But because of our exports being much higher to the emerging countries and they're backing down, so you can see that this has affected growth across the board because of those dynamics.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So the thing that comes out of this is that you have that phenomena, and then the second daily report in every media outlet in the world is what's going on with oil.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know,
and we see the effect in gasoline prices.
Correct.
I noticed going down the street, they've come down a little bit after going up a couple.
Yeah. So it's a roller coaster, and as much as we like paying, I think I paid $151 or $145
last week, yeah.
In Madison, you know, and things, but which is, who would think you could fill up your car for under $30 again? But you know, so that's a little different issue. But the point here is, as we talked on this show, and everybody's pretty much aware of, the growth of the U.S. oil industry in the last decade has been exponential.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, up to 4 or 5 million barrels a day we're drilling, and we were talking about being totally reliant on our own resources by 2020, and then they shortened it up to, I think, 2018, and you know, the life was good, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, in doing that, you know, many companies borrowed, and many banks were very excited to, because oil was $100, $190, $100, $110 a barrel, and so, you know, the bank was had good assets and stuff like that. Well, it's down now, and so between the oil and between the slowing growth, especially with all the emerging countries having issued debt to fund theirs. The really underlying issue and the note of volatility is, what is the status of who owns that, who holds that debt, and what's going to be good, and what's going bankrupt, and what banks and what financial institutions hold that?
Yeah. Well, I saw a little business blurb just the other day about a driller filing for bankruptcy protection as a result of the losses they've incurred because of the crash in oil prices. Are we going to see more of that, do you think?
Oh, I definitely think, because and that's, you know, that's the crux of the matter, is who owns the debt. But think about this. All economics is pretty much based on the simple supply and demand.
Okay.
All right. And last year in the United States, the demand for energy was the biggest increase in several years.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with prices coming down, to go to Chicago costs much less to drive down and back than it used to. So you go to Chicago. You know, the barriers to doing things because of low oil prices for the consumer is eliminated in things. So the demand, it isn't that the demand is necessarily falling off the cliff, which people think to a certain degree it has, and that's why. It's that with the U.S. bringing on so many additional barrels, all right, and then you've got through Iran and now being able to come back into the market after being off the market for a long time, Iraq gearing up to fund their battle against ISIS, and then you've got countries like Venezuela, Nigeria, Russia, that have to produce and sell oil, because most of those are government owned, and in order for those countries to meet their budget, pay their bills, they've got to sell their number one asset and that. So the point is, demand is continuing to hold steady and obviously modestly increase, but supply is still much greater than demand. And so the simple economic analysis is until they do something to curtail supply, the prices are going to stay low.
In fact, I just read an article yesterday that an ex, quote-unquote expert on oil markets is predicting that these prices will range from 30 to maybe 50 per barrel for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, and, you know, those predictions tend to be as good as this piece of paper
in front
of me.
I know.
But, you know, the fact is, what they're saying is this isn't a short-term hiccup.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Because the OPEC countries are kind of caught in betwixt and between because they need the revenue, all right? I mean, you've seen Saudi Arabia doing things they've never done before, like potentially putting their oil company up into the public market. And, you know, so you're seeing a lot of atypical behavior. And so the fact that no one can see changes is a byproduct of them believing that no one is in a financial condition to make the sacrifice of cutting. All right. In the old days when OPEC was the player and they decided, well, oil prices were too low, they simply, and they oftentimes with Saudi Arabia, cut back on what they were selling into the marketplace.
Right.
Saudi Arabia is making a play now that the newfound shale companies in the United States basically has gotten in and become a major player. And if they hold their line long enough, that there will be more and more of these things go bankrupt. And that circles back to, you know, the fact that they have a lot of debt. Who's going to survive, who's not going to survive? And then from there, we'll go back to this as it pertains to the banks.
Well, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about all this fear, how it affects markets, and we're also going to talk about some strategies to employ during these wild times. You're listening to Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Bry. We'll be back with more right after this.
On the Badger Sports Network, here's Matt LePay and Mike Lucas.
Badgers up 14. He slips a pass, ill-gated. He goes up and throws it down hard. Khalil Iverson with bad intentions. He flushed it with force. Timeout Maryland as the Badgers now lead by 16. Hill runs it down right sideline. Jordan right wing drives baseline. Cuts across the lane. Feeds Hayes. Open three. Left wing. Got it. Cold-blooded Nigel Hayes. Dribble front court. Drives by Iverson to the rim shot. Blocked by Iverson. Into the hands of Hat. Dribble on the dribble. Gives it to Suleiman right side. 46 seconds to play. Suleiman feeds Carter. Underhands to Trimble. 42 seconds to play. Trimble the pass. Stolen by Hat. Lead feed Brown. Down the lane. Thank you and good night. Slam dunk Vito Brown.
Basketball at its best from Learfield Sports.
AM 1320 WFHR.
Here's your forecast from the WeatherEye Weather Center.
A wind advisory is currently in effect. A chance of rain showers and thunderstorms continuing this afternoon, otherwise gradually clearing skies by the evening. Daytime highs topping out in the mid-40s. A southerly wind of 15 to 20 that could gust to 40 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies in store for tonight. Lows bottoming out in the mid-30s. Again with a westerly wind of 15 to 20 that could gust to 30 miles an hour. From the WeatherEye Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Nikki Latola.
Cloudy and, 46 right now at AM 1320. Welcome back to Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Bry. Again, you can reach your local investment professionals by calling 715-422-0700. And, Pete's here. And so let's talk about banks and interest rates and negative interest rates. And
yeah, I think this is obviously because it's almost unprecedented at so much, of the world between banks and central, Federal Reserve equivalents,
right,
have gone to some form of negative interest rates. So, you know, negative interest rates mean basically I give you my money, Carl, and I pay you for the right to take it.
All right? Nice deal for me.
Correct. Yeah, and just think about the logic of that, that why are people doing that? Well, A, they're scared, and B, they think rates are even going to get worse. But here's the ramifications. If I'm a bank, and the banks, you know, oftentimes give their excess deposits to the central bank of their country and stuff like that, of which they get paid on. So they're getting income from that.
Okay? Right.
Well, now that they're negative, they do that, they have to pay them. So, A, if they do it, obviously it's an expense to them, so it drops down the profit. If they don't do it, they still lose the income because they aren't getting paid on their deposits.
Okay.
The other part of negative is that because they're negative, the yield curve and the yield you get on the 3-year, the 5-year, the 10-year, the 30-year tends to come down correspondingly. And so the margin, net loan margins shrink.
Okay.
So they're not making as much on each loan. So what it does is it minimally slows the growth of banks who are involved in these type of programs. And so consequently, you know, they're not going to be as profitable. And then the question is, you know, what do their balance sheets look like? Who's holding on the oil and things like that? So what we've seen is the European banks have certainly gotten hit, and last week they got a little, this week they got a little reprieve. Our banks have gotten hit quite in sympathy. And so the banks are kind of, as much as our government hates banks and go to great lengths to regulate them, to fine them, you know, there's literally billions and billions of fines have been paid from 8 years ago, which, you know, rightly so or wrongly so or whatever, but all that money goes to the government to, I guess, pay down our debt, which is a spit in the ocean, but it's less money that they have to borrow, to lend to borrowers, and so consequently, there's not as much money in the cycle, and so the negative interest rate thing is a scary thing. I think.
What's the purpose of it, basically? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, if I'm going to pay you to hold my money,
right?
Maybe I'm going to buy real estate. Maybe I'm going to buy stocks. Maybe I'm going to buy bonds.
Okay.
To get you into other assets.
Okay, so it's to get out of the banks, get back into the stock markets and other assets.
Correct.
Okay. Of course, the U.S. isn't to that point, but could we get to that point? The federal, she basically said to Congress, it could happen.
Yeah, and again, it could. I mean, and I think in her response, in her position, there is what might happen, and what is I need to cover my behind so that I can reference that we warned you 3 years and two months ago that this could be a possibility. You know, we're in a time now where we're seeing things that we've never seen before. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, no, that'll never happen, or yeah, it'll happen. But I think negative interest rates for the United States would be a sign of not necessarily warm and fuzzy.
Okay, so that leads to all this fear and their effects on the markets and basically stampede to get out at times, it looks like. Your take on it?
Well, you know, I think we've talked about this in previous shows. One of the phenomenons going on here is 2000 to 2002 was a bitter, almost 3-year bear market. From October of 2007 to March of 2009, you know, that was an unbelievable, scary. The whole financial world was in play. And so I think that those memories are still quite fresh in everybody's mind, and we again had from 2009 to May, June of last year, had an incredible run up in the marketplace. So that, you know, I think when you get these kind of disconcerting news and events, the path of least resistance is this, the sell, because think about it, by selling and going in the money market, you're basically getting no money and no potential for any interest or anything like that. So I think the memories over the last 15 years triggers part of this fear, because the reality is that the S&P and the Dow really hasn't come down 20% from its high, which is the definition of a bear market.
Right.
It just feels that way.
Yeah. So which, I guess, that leads into strategies. What does Buena Vista recommend? What do you recommend for investors? You know, they're nervous. They're scared.
They are, and I think you put it into three kind of distinct categories, right? I think if you're conservative, retired,
right,
without a doubt, you know, your budgetary needs that you're drawing upon from your investment portfolio, i.e. property taxes or your required distributions from your retirement account that you need to make every day, every year, you know, or whatever you're drawing out of that, I think you need to have at least 1 year of that payment in cash. Because you got a year, you don't have to worry about it, the cash is there. In that vein, you know, I think there's some real opportunities in 1 to 3 year bonds. You know, you can get 1.5 to 3%. We bought some General Motor bonds at 3% out to 19. We bought some Ford bonds out there. And again, 3% historically is, well, big deal, but 3% is 3% more than zero. And then you may have some income-producing stocks, which would be a minor portion of your portfolio. If you are aggressive,
mm-hmm,
I think that some of the interesting plays is that what I think is doing best and will continue to do the best is the biggest, strongest, best balance sheet companies, traditionally companies that pay dividends and have increased their dividends for a while, all right?
Right.
And so having a portfolio of those or a mutual fund or ETF that is a similar ilk makes some sense, and you can generate some income. One of the things that I know several of us have done and is to hedge our portfolios. Because money market is paying zero,
mm-hmm,
there's an ETF called the SH, which is basically shorting the S&P 500. So if you don't need cash, you can put you can invest into the SH. And so essentially, depending on how much you do, it mitigates your downside. So if the market's going down, you're making money on that position.
Okay.
Right? You may be losing money on your portfolio, all right, but you're getting the dividends for them. So if you hedge it to your satisfaction, you know, the ups and downs really don't necessarily, but you're getting your income stream. And at some point, you have to unwind it. But if you're bearish here, having some downside protection is really gives you ability to sleep at night if the market rebounds strongly, which I don't see this turning around on a dime. You've got a situation where you're getting an income from your stocks or your bonds, but you're also somewhat protected.
Are you concerned we could be entering a bear market, or is it too early to tell?
You know, it's a million-dollar question, and I don't know exactly. This is the economist on one hand and then on the other. But, you know, the consumer, who's 70%, as previously stated, of the GDP, you look at housing starts, they were fine. Automobiles are, you know, look like they're going. People got more money because of lower gas prices, lower energy prices, unemployment's low, wages are going up. So that all really bodes well for the consumer. All right. So the question becomes, you know, if that stays status quo, I think the U.S. economy will avoid recession. If, in fact, the spread in the manufacturing companies and the oil companies continue to maintain and there's less manufacturing going on, and in Texas and North Dakota and all of